Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Listen, I really don't have time for small talk at the moment.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 11, Barefoot at Kate Fest. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Is this a foot fetish episode?
No. Or is it?
Guest directed by Quentin Tarantino.
You'll never know. You don't listen to these. Hello, listeners. Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hi.
Hello, everyone who's been wondering when we were finally going to cover the rodeo property that every single Luke Perry magazine that we've covered has also referred to. Mm-hmm. It is called 8 Seconds. It went through various names, but it came out as 8 Seconds. It is available on Amazon, and we'll be talking about it on Again With This, episode 230 on March 7th. March 4th is actually the anniversary of Luke Perry's untimely demise. So we are commemorating, hopefully in a positive way, his life and works by finally talking about 8 Seconds. Hopefully tight dungarees will be involved, but we will give you a full report and you can hear that report and our report on 229 other things at againwiththispodcast.com/club.
I am being told now by Just Watch, touching my earpiece, it is leaving as we're recording this in 8 days on February 20th. So by the time you hear this, it's going to be gone from Prime Video. But according to this, it will still be on the Roku channel, which is free with ads. So if you skipped it, now's your chance to watch it with ads or rent it on Apple. Shall we talk about Barefoot at Cape Fest?
Sure. And all the many loving shots of feet that we do not get in this episode of television.
Yeah, we sure don't, because they're finally maybe in winter-ish, although people sure are walking around without coats when they're outside, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, it's the usual when/where are we in the calendar on the East Coast, but doesn't really matter, and there's so much hot air coming out of Ethan, that everyone's going to stay nice and toasty.
Well, we'll get to that as well. But first, we have to talk about our C-plot. Oh no, Pacey's in the school play and Andy's assistant directing. We first see Andy when she's hassling a Mr. Broderick that we've never seen before about the school play, which is going to be Barefoot in the Park. She is not trying to get an audition. She wants to assistant direct, which according to the flyer that she confronts him with is needed. She says she is perfect for the assignment, clip two.
I'm smart, bossy, and super efficient. And the truth is, you need me.
I mean, okay. Are we going back to this, Andy? Because I'm okay with it. But I did enjoy her reclaiming her, or just claiming her particular bossy power in that way.
Yes.
Maybe she's turning it around?
Yeah. We will find out he does need her. He's just not going to acknowledge that he does, which is going to be a problem. I'll also say those qualities probably make her a better fit for a stage manager, but I doubt the show is going to bother making that distinction. But shout out Adam Crowsworth. Hello. We see you. We hear you.
Yes, we do.
Mr. Broderick snatches the flyer away all, why didn't you just say so? Which, you know, is how you can tell this is the quote comedy end quote plot. The other way you can tell is that we get another montage of bad auditioners. One is a jock in a mesh jersey. One is a nerd with a very thick North Carolina accent. One has a lot of statement jewelry on for an otherwise straight presenting dude. Sarah said in her picture of him, this really was a moment in time in men's styling. And it's true. It was.
Yeah. Also, the slightly too large down to the pointed collarbone revealing Henley.
Uh-huh.
I'll also note the IMDb page for this episode lists most of these montaged auditioners as bad actor number one, bad actor number two.
Yep.
And then there's finally one that Andy's like, cartoon hard eyes. And he's listed as like, not that bad kid, which made me laugh.
Mm-hmm. He is also cute and is on his way to being good. I agree with the IMDb description. Andy also approves. Mr. Broderick is getting a migraine. Andy insists that the cute guy has some dramatic flair, but Mr. Broderick already has someone in mind for the male lead. Andy says they're out of other options, but clip three.
The boy I know is a deplorable student, and he has the ethics of a billy goat.
We have already cast our Corey and Velasco. Please don't let our only Paul slip away.
Have no fear, Miss McPhee. I cut a deal with one of my students. The kid is a natural with comedy.
Okay. Mr. Broderick, if I may be so bold. From my limited perspective, I see but two kinds of actors. Those with talent and those with the ability to expand on that talent. Which requires maturity, which requires a sense of responsibility, which requires the ability to come both prepared and on time.
Hey, you guys, I'm sorry I'm late. I'm here to read for the role of Paul.
Andy is the only one of us possibly on Earth who did not see where all of that was going based on her reaction, but I'm not mad.
No, I'm not either. Have you ever seen the movie?
I have.
Those are big shoes to fill, but I feel confident about the future Dr. Fuckboat's prospects. Master Fuckboat?
Sometime after the auditions, Andy and Pacey run into each other at the stairs, and she announces that she wants him to quit. Pacey takes a long beat before saying Mr. Broderick saw his potential, but Andy yips that this was her after-school activity. But Mr. Broderick promised Pacey a C in English to do this. Andy seems to think this is a shameful reason, so Pacey says Mr. Broderick thinks that Pacey might be good at this. Pacey does too. Andy calls Mr. Broderick a lousy English teacher and a terrible director. She's heard that he has botched every play for the past 5 years, which may be all the more reason to stick with the lead you know can deliver this material, but she's heard from the drama geeks that it takes all of their energy to get Mr. Broderick over his frequent stress breakdowns. Andy got into this to get over Pacey, and on top of not wanting to see him all the time for that reason, she also doesn't want Pacey's inexperience to send Mr. Broderick over the edge. Pacey says she can quit then. Witters aren't quitters, which may be true broadly. Has not been true of Pacey since we met him, but sure, I guess that's the line this week.
Yeah, I mean, I assumed it was more of a play on winners aren't quitters and didn't take that as a character note too seriously, but who knows?
At rehearsal later, Mr. Broderick and his asthma inhaler are not beating the allegations that he's incompetent at directing. Clip four.
It's not that kind of club. It's a locker room and a handball court, and to sleep there, I'd have to keep winning the serve.
No, stop right there, Pacey. In theory, your character may deliver his lines like that, but in concept, no.
In concept, no.
Yes.
What precisely is the difference between in theory and in concept?
Well, I think what Mr. Broderick means
What Mr. Broderick means is that he can speak for himself. You see, Paul desires his young bride to know she knows nothing of the real world.
Right, which practically speaking means what?
Louder and angrier.
Louder and angrier.
Yes, let's do it again right now. Louder and angrier.
It's not that kind of club. It's a handball court with a locker room, and to stay there, I'd have to keep on winning my serve.
Good, I liked it.
You like that?
Well, except for the hand stuff, you were gesticulating.
Oh, hey, gesticulating me? Never. I mean, sometimes in the privacy of my own
home. Wait, Pacey, that, just now, that's it. You nailed it.
What just now?
The joke, the dry, smug delivery. That's the character.
Miss McPhee, am I or am I not the director here? You're confusing my actors.
Well, I just thought that...
Don't think. Ever.
Andy, this is your sign to go try out for basketball or something. This guy's not going to get better. He sucks.
No. And like a keener like Andy, who would be part of activities in order to bolster her college resume, would probably not really care that much about whether it was a fulfilling use of her time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not loving Heather trying to hang a light on certain bad blocking ticks on the part of the cast, and the fact that the writers often don't know that something that they've said means the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like in concept and in theory, it's like, right. Okay, well, but you make like 3 usage mistakes elsewhere in the script. So maybe don't have a runner about this. But yeah, this is all a lot. Let's face it.
Indeed. Mr. Broderick orders them to go again, louder and angrier. The next one is the loudest and angriest yet, but at least it makes Andy laugh. And the next day, Pacey's unnamed leading lady is bitching to Andy that she ditched a date for this non-rehearsal. Behind her, Lee Norris, future star of One Tree Hill, also isn't excited about another round of louder and angrier. I guess he's the aforementioned Velasco. Pacey suggests that since they're all there, they could just start and Andy can direct them. She doesn't want to get even further onto Mr. Broderick's bad side, but Pacey reminds her that she told them the play was her after-school activity, and Andy lets herself be won over, giving Pacey an actress number one, good notes. And when we return, Pacey and actress are winding up a scene. Mr. Broderick has arrived by now and applauds and says he likes where it's going. The leads both try to credit Andy, but Mr. Broderick thinks it's all the exercises he's been using to stretch their range. He asks Andy to get the set designs, but when she unrolls them, he says they're not what they discussed. She says they are and repeats what he said he wanted, but then he changed his mind, he says. Pacey rolls his eyes as Andy tries to get them back on task, but Mr. Broderick tells her not to argue and just to follow orders. She drops the plans and stomps out, Pacey running after her. He offers to quit, but she says he can't because he's actually good. He thinks that she is better. The production needs her, and so does Pacey. Mr. Broderick's not going to stay out of her way, so what's in it for her? She wonders. Does she mean in concept or in theory? He asks, and she's not convinced. Pacey tells her he'll see her at rehearsal and then runs off while she yells after him so that they can't argue about it anymore, and that's where we leave it for now. On to the B-plot. Dawson has issues with Nikki. Joey has issues with Dawson. You're not going to believe this, but Dawson's come back from the film festival more insufferable than ever before. Clip 5.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dawson, but don't you already own a camera?
Video camera, yeah.
And the difference is...
Well, imagine Schindler's List shot on a family camcorder. Right? I mean, video is a great format to learn on, but the look and the feel is strictly amateur. Film is key, and I think I'm finally ready to give it another spin.
Her.
The Aeroflex. Kipset has one and only 16mm camera.
She is a beauty, Dawson.
Nikki. Hey, what are you doing here?
Extra credit for Jordan's film class. Plus, I get to be near all the equipment.
Ah, how very earnest of you.
You're Joey, right?
Okay, A, Dawson's making this pro-film stance like 3 weeks before DV cameras make the leap to being good enough to make features on, way cheaper than film. B, I refuse to believe this random public high school on Cape Cod has this much film production gear. C, unless this is Nikki big-timing Joey, it's not credible. We saw them meet in the last episode and she watched a whole movie that Joey was in under her own name. And D, let's back up to Schindler's List. Dawson saying he thinks his next movie is going to be Schindler's List because it's not.
No, it's not.
Anyway, back to Joey. I guess she doesn't take it amiss because she says she's heard wonderful things about Nikki's film. Dawson asks for the Aeroflex, but Nikki got Mr. Jordan to give it to her for the next 4 weeks against established policy that Dawson tries to assert. Joey smirks behind Dawson while he stews, so officially no one is on his side. When we find him next, he's with Joey walking into his kitchen, still bitching about Nikki monopolizing the equipment. Arriving at the completely empty family room shuts him up, although some accessories are still in there, as Sarah's picture highlights.
Yeah, yikes. There was a good horror movie in Capeside, and it was not the one Dawson made. It was about that gargoyle that's looming over the Dawson Leary or the Leary living room and apparently has been this whole time. And can I ask why doesn't Gail just like either buy all new furniture for wherever she's living or make Mitch move out? The divorce was not her idea and she's the breadwinner. Beat it.
Right. That's why the furniture is gone, because it was part of the settlement that she got to have it for her apartment. And Gargoyle is very funny. I guess it's like, what do they call them on a ship? It's like a figurehead. It's like a lady figurehead.
Yes, a figurehead.
Like that was what I was. Horrible thing Jeff Bezos made of Lauren Sanchez.
Yeah. For his and I mean, it's boat. Actually not far off from that particular figurehead.
It's true. So anyway. Back to the scene. Gail says she asked Mitch not to say anything about the move because she wanted to explain herself. Is she going to explain where he's going to sit when he watches TV? Because that doesn't seem to be part of it. But Dawson, suddenly evolved and mature, laughs that she doesn't have to explain herself. This is how it works. She hopes he can stay this positive because it'll make everything easier on everyone. And he says, clip six.
I'm pleased.
Since when?
Yeah. Aim more forcefully, five head.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, like this is just going to be yet another Dawson disappears into his own bunghole about his parents' divorce plot, which if it weren't this, it would be something else. But if you haven't watched this episode yet and were considering it and just want to skip all of the scenes where he's navel gazing about being a child of a broken home, you have my permission. God knows.
So when Gail has gone upstairs, Joey prods Dawson to talk about how he's feeling. He thinks his parents are divorced and he's glad it's over, but Joey asks about his feelings and that he's still working on. Dawson then decides to redirect his anger about his parents into haranguing Nikki about the camera, coming to her home to say she's on an ego trip and that she may be the principal's daughter, but that doesn't give her the right to be rude. Like, as rude as going to someone's house outside school hours to whine about a decision that a teacher signed off on, or ruder than that.
Yeah. Also, you're on said principal's property. Maybe keep your voice down.
Yeah. Oh, he's so pissy this whole time. I mean, we'll hear it in the clips, but it's fucking unbelievable.
Bitch Pileggi is how he was referred to in my notes.
The attitude. Anyway, Nikki wearily says she didn't know Dawson wanted to use the camera, but he's going to have to get used to it. And before Dawson can shoot something back, Principal Green comes out, all smiles, shakes his hand, calls Dawson his second favorite student filmmaker. Terrible list.
LOL.
Principal Green is pleased that the two of them have become friends, and Dawson's like, yeah. Then Principal Green invites Dawson to stay for dinner. Both kids say he couldn't possibly, but Principal Green insists, promising not to talk too much about Nikki, and apparently gives up on that pledge because at dinner he's bragging that Nikki's probably the only girl in America who asked for a Super 8 camera for her 10th birthday. She delightedly gasps at him not to before he says her first movie was A Day in the Life of Daddy. Principal Green asks if Nikki has enlisted Dawson to work on her new film, and they go on, clip 7.
So tell me, has she enlisted you for her new film?
No, she hasn't. I don't even know what it's about.
That's between me and my crew.
So in order to bask in the glory of this mind-bending idea of yours, I have to offer my services?
No.
Or you could just jump at a volcano, asshole. Yes.
You're already being shitty about it, so no.
You're at her father's dinner table. Why are you like this? Don't talk to adults like that. Why don't he and Brandon get slapped? Why?
It really is shocking. Nikki flirtily asks if Dawson's offering. Is she asking for his help? Dawson wonders. Well, Nikki doesn't need help, she says. Principal Green comments that he thinks it would be great if they work together, and they both snap at him like that it's not happening. And he's like, never mind. And then everyone sits there uncomfortably for a while. And on his way out, Dawson stops in Nikki's room to get his jacket and looks around curiously at her posters and stuff. When she finds him there, he says there's no evidence in her decor that she's a film geek. She guesses his room is wall-to-wall Spielberg posters, and he says it's more or less a shrine. She doesn't think it's a bad thing. There's just so much to be passionate about that it seems silly to focus on one. But if you love it, he thinks, why not immerse yourself in it? Nikki loves film too, of course, but it's because it allows her to explore all the other subjects that interest her. Because if all you care about is film, you're just going to end up making movies about other movies. See, Kevin Smith. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nikki adds that she is sorry about her dad, since the divorce, he is aggressive about her making friends. Dawson guesses that she's cool with the divorce, but no, she gets worn out by shuttling between her parents and the shit they talk about each other and the expectation that she will be pleasant about all of it. Dawson would assume she's not affected by any of it, but it's just a good disguise. She is as angry as any kid on the inside. How angry, he asks. She gives him a slayer glare and then says she's angry enough to make a film about it. Apparently, Dawson didn't get that from watching it. And she clarifies that it's about what makes the American family functional or not. She asks how he feels about his parents' divorce. He hesitates and she backs off, but he can be as honest as she just was, she says. Most of the time, he's okay with the current situation. Clip 8.
You know, I mean, maybe I'm just self-obsessed, but I don't think about it that much, you know?
Other than when I can make myself the world's biggest victim, he does not add. Sometimes, he says, sneaks up on him that he is the product of something that didn't work out. Parents are our primary examples of love, and his wasn't strong enough to... And then he suddenly stops mid-sentence, gets very busy putting his coat on. Nikki is alarmed and tries to stop him, but he leaves. And back in his room, Dawson's taking his Spielberg posters down when Joey comes through the window. She thinks this is all about his parents, but he tells her that talking to Nikki made him realize he is no longer the kid who hung the posters up. His viewpoint was so limited, he's not sure what he sees now, but it's not this. And Joey tries to understand. Clip 9.
So you're at Nikki's house, your worst enemy.
A, she's not my worst enemy. B, have you missed everything that I told you?
I never thought I'd say this about you, Dawson, but you're such a sellout.
What?
I mean, first Eve practically tugs you around town by a dog collar, and now this new film girl breezes into town, and you're tossing your identity out the window.
I'm not tossing my identity out the window. If anything, for the first time in my life, I'm actually getting close to discovering what my identity is. All right, I talked to Nikki. She helped me sort through what this word is with my parents.
Dawson, I wanted to talk to you about that, and you didn't want to talk.
No, I didn't. How did this become all about you?
Because you ran to her.
I did not!
What did you do then?
Look, you want to cite themes for our friendship? Try this on for size, Joey. Every time I express one iota of interest or even mere respect for anyone of the opposite sex, you attack me like I'm some sort of criminal.
Oh, and you don't attack me.
No, I don't. As you notice, I have not once asked about Mr. Ivy League.
Yeah, that's noted. His name's AJ, okay? And maybe your not asking me about him is worse than my attacking you, okay?
No, it's not. My choice is civil.
Oh, and I'm not civil.
No, you're yelling. That's not civil.
You're yelling too.
His anger is so nostrily. You can see that in the visual aids.
Oh my God. Just more fucking flares than a Led Zeppelin concert. It's so bad.
Joey tells Dawson to have fun and exits the way she came, and he closes the window, which he probably should because it's December.
Mm-hmm. Also, ew.
Later, Dawson's staring at his bare walls when Joey appears, asking if she still has ladder privileges. She has brought him a new poster. It's the Imagine one with a multicolored version of John Lennon's line drawing self-portrait. She reminds him of the summer that they both got obsessed with Mitch and Gayle's old Beatles albums. Dawson, at that time, wanted to be John Lennon, changed the world with songs he wrote. He wasn't limited, and she wanted to remind him of that. And I have to note, that's not a Beatles poster, but fine. I get what they're doing, but it's not.
Yeah. Also, way to pick the worst Beatle. Well, yeah, I said it.
There's also that. Joey also wanted to remind Dawson that even though she sometimes gets jealous, she still hears him. No matter how much they yell or how quiet Dawson gets, and he says he hears her too. He doesn't. She knows that what's going on with him is huge, and it's okay if he doesn't share it with her as long as he promises to share it with someone. He doesn't actually promise anything, asking her to help him put the poster up. And Imagine starts up as Dawson asks if it'll inspire him to walk his own path. Joey says he always has. He just needs to widen it and look out for his Yoko and... I could go on about this, but I'll spare you all my views on this as a one-time Beatle obsessive who read every book about them in the St. Catherine's Public Library, but Yoko wasn't the problem. Linda was. There, I said it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she was.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Finally, we have our A-plot. Jack and Jen have romantic crises at a music festival. These two, remember, they live together and they're shopping for groceries as friends and housemates. It's nice. Jen makes Jack justify the 3 different cereals he is about to buy, which is no problem. Grape Nuts are the perfect day starter, Cocoa Pebbles are a good afternoon snack, and Cap'n Crunch is a late night staple. He is 1/3 right, in my opinion, as a cereal connoisseur. Mm-hmm. Jen laughs that this proves he's Andy's brother, but takes the sugar cereal back. And then a voice says, at least Jack fought the good fight. Of course, it's Ethan. Jack gets flustered enough to have to physically shake off the shock. Jack thought Ethan was going back to school last weekend, but he is returned for Cape Fest. Jack doesn't know what that is and guesses it's a feed the poor thing. I don't know why he would think a fest would be about that. But it's a free concert in the park. Ethan is going to claim a campsite the next day. Everywhere in Capeside seems like it's walking distance from everywhere else, but sure, why not be cold and potentially wet instead of just arriving in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
He tells Jack he should come if he's a fan. No band has been mentioned yet, so is the question whether Jack is a fan of music. He may or may not be, but he says he is, and Ethan rudely tests him by asking his favorite Foo Fighter. Jack tries Courtney Love, and Ethan even more rudely snorts, and he's in the Alternative Nation. Wrong zip code. After a long silence, Ethan tells him to come anyway. Jen returns and pronounces Ethan cute. Jack tells her he's gay. Jen says, aren't they all? And no, that's kind of been Jack's problem for the past 20 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Jack's at the campsite trying to sell Jen on how much fun they're going to have in the wild. When Jack identifies a spot, Jen snarks that she thought she went to extreme measures to get in guys' pants. Jack denies that's what he's doing since Ethan is the first gay guy he's so much as talked to. Jen says Jack is entering new emotional territory, so before he takes a step, she should at least admit he's taking it. And then I suddenly have a strong memory flash about this cowl scarf thing that she's wearing. It's like a turtleneck with like scarfy tails, like just the collar mm-hmm. of a turtleneck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like a cowl, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of like wrapping it around twice like you would with something like that, or at least how I knit them, then it's just like already turtlenecked and knitted in the round. And then I guess there are the, I don't know, scarfy tails in case that's not enough mm-hmm. for your neck. It's
yes.
a beautiful, beautiful color on her, though. It's this periwinkle that mm-hmm. is really pretty.
Yeah.
Which is good because she has it on the entire episode. So it's nice that it works on her.
Very much does. Yeah. And it's that wide ribbing that was very of the style at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I had a J. Yep. Crew zipped hoodie in that, in green, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Jen tells Jack not to brush this off as just wanting to get to know Ethan, but Jack insists that that's all it is, and Jen's like, sure. And she advises Jack to let Ethan come to him, whereupon Jack immediately declares that he's going to go try to find him. And he is prowling the campsite when Ethan spots him from the tree he's using to hang a tarp. Ethan asks if Jack's alone, and he tells Ethan about Jen. When Ethan is all by his lonesome, Jack doesn't know where to go with that, so Ethan barrels ahead, suggesting they get something to eat and take a walk, and Jack blurts his agreement. Time passes as they shuffle along the cold beach. Ethan, Ethaning, clip 10.
After the train ride, I thought for sure you'd ask for my number.
Yeah, well, typical paranoia set in. Can I say?
I figured as much.
How come you didn't ask for mine?
Because I could. It's more important that you learn to ask. You're the newbie, remember?
Yeah, newbie. Barely out of gay kid, soon to have his heart broken, right?
Good recall.
Well, there's not much I'm gonna forget about that conversation. That was a first for me.
It was your first time talking to another gay kid?
Yeah, well, unless you count the internet.
I don't.
Okay.
Oh my God. Walk away. It was
worst.
More important for you to learn how to ask for my number. Would you like the number of knuckles that you're about to be snacking on, you condescending jackass? So annoying.
Yeah.
But I mean, he is exactly that, like, extremely cute guy that you're just like, oh, I'm really being patronized, but I don't care because he's hot.
He's so cute.
Poor Jack.
But such a chore. Meanwhile,
yeah, God, really.
Jen is struggling to put up their tent alone. She sees a kid rolling by with hot food, and he points her to a guy behind him who's a genius with a veggie burger. It is, of course, Henry. Clip 11.
You want your bun toasted?
Thought you'd never ask.
You dumped him!
Nope.
That's mean.
No. Yeah.
She tries to chat, but he is in no mood. He is not, however, so cold as to refuse her a veggie burger. Then she presses her luck and asks him to help her with her tent. He glares at her with flat loathing, but does come with her. Clip 12.
So you never told me that you were a vegetarian?
Never asked.
Do I detect a note of ambivalence in seeing me?
That would be correct.
Any particular reason?
You mean besides the fact that you led me on for the sole purpose of crushing me underfoot?
That's not true, Henry, and you know it.
You could have fooled me.
This is dumb. Like, every episode before the homecoming one, it was people being like, Henry is nice. Don't do exactly what she did. Like,
yeah.
Jack said it. Miss Freckling said it in that episode. Like, everyone was like, you know what you're doing, and if you're not interested in him, don't spend time with him. And she did anyway. Like, this is very disingenuous.
Mm-hmm. And it's Ethaning. And like, best case, she was Ethaning at the Freckling event. She's like, you know, you just don't know what it's like to be trampled. And it's like, okay, well, then go somewhere else. Like, why are you doing this to him? I'm glad he's setting a boundary, but that's not a note of ambivalence. That's a note of anger, and it's justified.
Yes, it is.
Take your ration and leave him alone.
But instead, she just acts like she has no idea what he's talking about, and he moans about her enjoying being on the requited side of unrequited love. Instead of just denying that, however unconvincingly, and letting him get back to business, Jen pushes her luck even further. Clip 13.
Henry, I thought that you and I agreed to be friends.
Friends? You haven't even noticed, have you?
What? Noticed?
That we haven't spoken in over a month. For the past 4 weeks, I've been giving you the silent treatment. And it hasn't even registered on your radar screen. Hell, it could have fallen off a cliff 10,000 feet for all you care.
That's not true. Now,
you know what? You can put up your own damn tent.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Then Jack, still wandering around the beach with Ethan, marvels that Ethan knew at some undisclosed young age that he was attracted to men. But Ethan just meant he knew at that age that he was different. Clip 14.
Being gay isn't about what sex you're attracted to. It informs so much of who and what you are.
Is this like how Darren Criss is straight but claims he's culturally queer? Because
I don't know. I do know that that was Rilo Kiley that Ethan was blathering over. And I have to wonder, this episode's runtime from DVD is like a little shorter than usual. So I have to wonder if there wasn't more Cape Fest and like Rilo Kiley playing it, because this is like all of their contributions to the Desert Blue soundtrack, which, P.S., you should watch that movie, it's cute, are also in this episode, which I enjoy. They're my favorite Rilo Kiley songs, but I have to wonder if we didn't see them on the main stage at some point and then that got cut, but these songs got left in. I don't know. I don't get it.
The internet doesn't seem to say so, just that the song was in the episode, but they weren't in it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there isn't any bands at all. They're like, we're going to camp the night before and then everything starts at the crack of dawn the next day. But like everyone is already leaving. We don't see any concert stuff at all.
Yeah. And they're like, it's 20 bands and it starts first thing in the morning. I'm like, oh, written by someone who has literally never even read about a music festival.
I didn't know about that too.
Jesus.
We'll get to it. But for now, the lecture is not over. Clip 15.
You haven't talked to another gay kid, so you definitely haven't kissed one, right?
No.
But you still know you're gay.
Sure.
How?
I just know, I guess.
Everyone always wants to define gay and straight by who you sleep with. It's not about that. It's about moments. It's about being too nervous to ask for my number. It's about conversations like this. It's about who and what you love. That's why you can't erase it. Because it's not just a part of your life. It's everywhere.
I wonder if this is supposed to be targeted to the straight parents of gay kids that might be watching to, like, assure them their children aren't just, like, deviant sex freaks. And I'm not an expert, but I feel like who you want to have sex with is part of how you define your sexuality.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a non-minority percentage of what's happening there is what your secondary sexual response to the opposite sex is or is not. I mean, I don't know, but this whole like, it's everywhere. I mean, what he is describing is adolescent mating ritual is A. B, another gay kid. Sir, you are 29 years old. Rewrite it. It's all really insufferable. And some of it like could be kind of relatable in terms of like that lecturing sort of hectoring sophomore that regardless of the issue or identity politic, like we all knew and or did that at around that age. But God, like it's just exhausting.
Yeah. So they've arrived back at Ethan's tarp where Ethan flips out because all of his camping gear is gone. And I actually was like, did he just fake this? But then I went back and saw it and like he did have stuff. This wasn't just all, you know, he didn't have a friend come and grab it so that he would have an excuse to hang out with Jack.
Right.
After dark, Jen is moping alone on the not-pitched tent that she didn't just ask one of the dozen campers around to help her with. Jack returns, and Jen's relieved to see that he is back from his stock, walk. She starts to tell him he'll never guess who she ran into. He probably will, because they know all the same people. But then she notices that Ethan is with Jack, and introductions are made with, of course, a handshake. Ethan guesses she can use some help, and she eagerly tells him to relieve her of all her feminist notions about spatial relations, which, boo, I couldn't do it either. That's because I'm dumb, not because I'm a woman.
Yeah, and because we're indoorsy, and that's why doors were invented, so you can be on the correct side of them.
It's true. I probably could figure it out, but I don't want to. That's the point.
Yeah. No.
Jack pulls Jen aside to tell her about the theft and say that Ethan needs somewhere to stay tonight, which no, he doesn't. He can walk 3 minutes to his house, but Jen beams as she guesses that Jack offered him a spot in their tent, and then her face falls when Jack asks her to get lost until midnight. And Jen, unlike Ethan, knows she could just go home and says she's going to do that and see him tomorrow. And on her way to the parking lot, she happens past Henry showing off another one of his hidden talents, singing Springsteen and guitaring in the bed of a truck. And I'm pretty sure that's not really Michael Pitt singing, but that's not the point. This is not attractive. I see what they're going for, but no.
Yeah, I think that was what I titled my screenshot of this and our visual aids was just absolutely not. And that
Later, Jack and Ethan talk about Jen and the time Jack and Jen were set up on a date. Ethan guesses it was for a school dance and patronizingly describes it as the oldest story in the world. And he takes his shoes off and gets in his sleeping bag to Jack's obvious disappointment. Ethan's like, are you going to turn off the light? Jack thought they would talk more, but they have a big day tomorrow watching, as Sarah said, 20 bands starting at daybreak. I guess the first ones are Meth Heads in that slot.
The jet lag five. They enjoy Rotten Tomatoes, so hurl away. Okay.
Outside, Jen sidles up to Henry to compliment his performance. He still doesn't want to talk to her, and she still isn't trying to read his body language or verbal language, as when he says that she can't just pretend to be his friend and then take off when his feelings scare her. She admits she misses him, the goofy way he used to look at her that made him think that she was worth the fuss. He says he used to spend every day dreaming about her, and every time she walked by, he lost himself. And he doesn't miss how she never looked at him, and Jen is shook. And in the morning, Ethan heads out to get some food and reminds Jack he's supposed to ask for Ethan's number. Jack doesn't get it, given that the night before, Ethan didn't even want to talk to him, which, like, it was nighttime. He talked to you for 8 hours before that, which is basically what Ethan says. He wanted to sleep, had nothing to do with the two of them being friends. And Jack says this, clip 16.
Friends. I figured you were probably interested. You're not. Even if I was, I would never go there with you. You're so not ready.
How could you possibly know what I'm ready for?
It doesn't mean that I'm not interested in you, Jack. It just means that if I'm gonna stay in your life, and I want to, that I'm a lot more likely to stick around this way.
So, you are interested?
No comment.
If only.
Well, this is sort of funny. I mean, as much as I didn't want to admit it, you were the first guy that I was ready to take that next step with, and you said no. I guess I should be somewhat discouraged. I don't know, I mean, I was really optimistic just to know that there's someone like you out there.
All right.
That would send me into the arms of a convent. Like, oh, there's someone like Ethan out there? That's a wrap. That's a wrap on my sexuality. Like, he's just, like, it's not the actor's fault, but oh my God, like, I just don't understand what this writer's room is trying to do. Like, who is this for? It's not like there's nobody gay in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to think that a lot of this is like, this is how we're going to choose to stall them actually, like, Frenching.
Right.
Because we got to figure out what the network is going to allow, and right, we don't want various, like, you know, Jesus-y parents groups bombarding the network with letters, blah, 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 blah. Like, I get that there are other considerations there, but this is not the way. He sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand them wanting to have Jack's first contact with a gay kid be with someone who, like, is experienced, as it were, like, has been out for a while. So it's not just two guys, like, fumbling around, not really knowing what to do. But why make him this lechery? Like, I don't know why he's, like, taken this upon himself.
Gatekeeping.
Yes, exactly.
And then he's just such a, like, not groovy pastor, but just mm-hmm. this, like, I don't know, like, he's just condescending in every single word and deed. Like, when they finally say goodbye for now, he's like, take care, Jack. Like,
mm-hmm.
what?
Yeah.
Do you want to make out with this bro or not?
Because right.
Take care is not how that is.
No, that's a kiss off. And if the whole point mm-hmm. is like, okay, at the end, you know, phone number accomplished, Jack does get it. Just say, like, call me. That's a normal thing to say when you've given someone mm-hmm. your number. Anyway, go to the visual aids for a diptych of the two of them and their extremely long lashes, because they are like Latisse models. Their eyelashes are off the chain.
And yeah, them getting tangled up is, I think, what Jack somehow still wants. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, even though he should feed that phone number to the first goat he sees, because nope.
Yeah. So then Jen returns to Henry's truck. He is still cold to her, but then she apologizes for being callous and thinking that just because she's older, she knew better. She stayed up all night thinking about what he said, and he was right. She doesn't know what it's like to be in love like that, but she would like to know. And if one of them is younger than the other, she doesn't think it's him. And he melts and asks how she takes her coffee, so I guess we're doing this again. And then Jack and Jen are heading out, Jack telling her that the gay version of the Let's Be Friends speech isn't much different from the straight one. Jen forgives him for kicking her out. It's a turning point in a girl's life when her gay best friend ditches her for a guy. He's thrown by her cheery attitude, so she gives him the abridged version of a reunion with Henry, minus actually saying whom she's talking about, and that's it for the episode. Let's close it up by naming our MVP.
The music rights coordinator who got both of my very favorite Rilo Kiley songs onto the soundtrack and didn't make a big whoop about it. I wish Ethan hadn't been blabbering on about, you know, it's everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, are you shrooming? Is this a Malick movie? But enough about him.
I'm going to say Principal Green because even though it's Dawson, he doesn't realize how annoying he is. And it's very sweet that he's trying to help Nikki make friends with someone that he knows shares her interest, including mm-hmm. forcing her to have him for dinner. That's cute. Least valuable player. I mean, you can't really say Ethan. Like, he's annoying, but he's not the worst. I'm going to say...
No.
Jen, even though she did come around, she really was being very obtuse in those many exchanges with Henry. Like, you can't even say take a hint. He's directly saying, I don't want to do this. Stop it. And she won't. And she should.
Mm. Well, as tempting as it is to say either Dawson or Gail Leary's credit card company for not approving a purchase at Ethan Allen, like, let your child have his living room furniture. This is bonkers.
Yeah.
This divorce settlement is dumb. I'm actually going to say whoever wrote Ethan this way, because it's kind of a, like, snotty sophomore cousin to the way that so many gay, like, queer people in culture are, like, tragic. Mm-hmm. And there has to be, like, sadness and death as part of, quote, the lifestyle all the time.
Right.
Like, late 90s, early aughts culture. So, yeah. And, like, Adam Kaufman also ended up playing this on Buffy and is just, like, too cute to keep being this patronizing fuckknuckle. Justice for that guy. I hope he's well. Next time on Again With This, Potter's Bed and Breakfast opens its doors. Jen opens her heart to Henry. Andy opens a dialogue with Jack about moving back home with her and Angry. And Dawson's nostrils open far enough to blot out the entire sun as he continues dwelling in his own butthole about his parents' divorce. You should open a roll of Tums before you gaze at our visual aids. That's all the important screenshots and GIFs from this and every other episode. They are at againwiththispodcast.com. That is also where you can find the entire archive of our episodes, be they about 90210, Melrose, or Dawson's Creek, againwiththispodcast.com/subscribe. And call or text us anytime at our dedicated number, 210-767-2237. I am Sarah D. Toasted Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is symbolic art poster Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, can put up his own damn tent. Talk to you next time.
You want your bun toasted?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine.
Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.